San Bonani, good morning. Once again, we are celebrating a woman of strength, women who are adding value, changing lives in South Africa, women in leadership. And today in studio, I have Mauri Sukas. She is the former ACDP Member of Parliament, a founder of Voice to Parliament, an organization that aims to amplify the voice of communities and fight to improve participation in democratic processes. She served in portfolio committees of health, social development, and education. She advocates for parental rights in education and the advancement of Christian democracy in politics. She's a mother of three children, happily married for over two decades. Mauri, good morning. Thank you for coming. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Bafana. I am doing very well. I'm speaking to you from a very cold Richmond today.
I can imagine. I think usually when I have such a strong profile of a lady like yourself, people ask, where does she come from? How did she make it? How did it all start?
Well, it started, my story is most likely the story of so many other South Africans, especially Black South Africans. I grew up on a farm in the Western Cape. And I did not know my father. And my mom raised us very, very strongly in terms of convictions, values. The farm, really, my rural upbringing or farm upbringing really shaped who I am, you know, the person that I am. So it all started for me really in the Western Cape, in the Boerland area. It's still one of the most beautiful places for me. It's a hartsplek, like we say in Afrikaans.
But somebody else will say, when you look at politics, most people tend to be a little bit radical. Some they want to be liberals, some they want to be nationalists. And you went for Christianity. Did you grow up in church?
No, I come from a very broken background. That's why I said when I answered you that I come from a background that most Blacks and colored South Africans would relate to. I come from brokenness. I found Christ at the age of 13 years old. That shaped my life. And I think it preserved my life. And my political beliefs were really shaped the more I looked at the biblical or the Christian worldview versus the challenges that we have, the challenges that we have, you know. So pre-94, if I am a child of the 80s, so we were the last high school children that were still boycotting, marching. You know, I was in fact part of the very last march just before the referendum, the day before the referendum in Cape Town. And we were meant to write exams. We never did. So my political consciousness, if you will, started at a very young age. I think for most of our generation, really, everybody in my generation, we had a political consciousness because of the time that we lived in. And our high schools at the time were the fighting ground, you know. It was youth that was taking the struggle up. So the Christian worldview was really shaped as I participated in a seminar on the biblical reconstruction for Southern Africa, where I was challenged, you know, on my views of racism, my views of what are the solutions for South Africa. And this was in 1993. So the Christian worldview and its position on the challenges of social, of injustice, apartheid, racism, and what the solutions would be, as really it is more my learning, I would say, because I studied at Rhema Bible College. I had a very strong Bible-based education because I prepared to go into pastoral ministry. And fortunately, I would say, it shaped the way I thought about politics and the problems that we have in our country at the time and even today the way I look at what the solutions are is shaped by my Christian worldview. Yeah.
I'm going to go straight into it. You're in Parliament. You served in the on the 6th administration. And I usually people would say being a woman in Parliament, being a woman in the corridors of power, it has its own challenges. Did you come across any challenges?
Oh, yes, you do. And being a girl from the church, you have challenges, you know?
Yeah, you...
I think the challenges are unique in the sense that I think Parliament, one of my colleagues from a different party said something that was really profound. Parliament's ground is cobblestones, right? So women with high heels, it breaks your heels, and it's very uncomfortable. To have high heels and walk. And when you're busy with parliamentary work in committees, you are walking between the different rooms for your parliamentary meetings, many times running to when parliament was not yet, when the burning didn't happen, we ran to the National Assembly after committee meetings. And one of the ladies said, you know, this place was not made for women, eh?
they didn't think about our heels.
Yeah, because it is so uncomfortable, right? And there are unique challenges for women in politics. Politics is a harsh environment. Political parties obviously speaks to women, to equality. They speak to inequality and the advancement of women. But what you will find is that political parties are the most toxic environments for women many times. And so the challenges that are unique to women is that they are mothers, you know, they're politicians serving the country, but they are mothers. They are breadwinners. Many of them are single parents. Heading up families and being the only breadwinners for extended family even. So those things make them unique in the sense that they have responsibilities that goes beyond their work in the public eye. And they need to survive in an environment that is toxic. I mean, politics is not the most healthy environment for any human being, in fact. It is a cutthroat environment within internal party politics and within the halls of power. It is a robust environment, you know.
But I'm asking, and you mentioned that because of most of you are mothers, and does it affect your family? Does it affect your kids? Did you have any challenges with family? You're always, mom, you're never home. Mom, you're always on committees. You never answer your phone. Does it come with that effect along the way?
Oh, yes, it does. Look, before I went into politics, I'm married to my best friend, fortunately.
I love that.
So I have a very strong support system in my family. I have adult children that has finished, graduated. They are professionals. And I have one daughter that is a teenager now. So that support system I had, which most, if a lot of women, let's say, don't have, right? My husband, my children, my family, we made a decision that as I went into parliament, we reorganized our life around that. But it comes with huge sacrifice, right? To your children, you're not as available as you have been, especially for our teenage daughter, and our adult children took the load together with my husband, you know? And when you look at that, right, and I'm a woman in a healthy, happy marriage, right? And you have a woman that does not have that support system. And a lot of South African women does not have such a support system. They need to bring the bag, as they say, right? They need to,
secure the bag.
They need to bring the bacon. Yeah. And they have that that challenge, you know? So from a political perspective, serving at the highest level of government in terms of being an MP it does come with a lot of personal sacrifice. It brings sacrifices to family. But like I say, I consider myself fortunate in that I have a very good support network, right? But I can speak to many other women that does not have that, where it is a it comes with tremendous sacrifice for them.
Sacrifice. I'm gonna go into this as a woman who is who's in power, who's an influencer. Looking at the woman empowerment plan from 1994 to today, how far do you think you have went in terms of empowering women? Are we doing good? Are we going bad?
I think we have certainly my generation. If I look at myself, and I thought about it last night when I looked at my daughter having a conversation with her, my conversation with her, she's being homeschooled, right? My mother never went to school, right? She couldn't, she signed her name with an X, right?
Yeah.
My mother never owned her own home, right? She owned her own home for the first time in the 2000s when she got her first RDP house. She was a farm worker. My mother was sold to my father, right? So we're talking about three generations. I look at my daughter. She is a graduate. She graduated at Stellenbosch University. I did not have the opportunity to go to university, right? My daughter now is being homeschooled. She's going to finish her high school much quicker. And she's already talking about what she's going to do. She knows what she's going to do. She's going to be a lawyer. So you look at three generations of women, right? With total different experiences within the South African context.
Yes.
But when you look at the challenges that women, in order for them to raise their children, to go to university, what brought me to the place where I now have a generation or the next, my kids, are in a position far better off than me, is the fact that I had opportunity and access. Yes, my mother had no opportunity in excess, right? So when we talk about women empowerment, what we actually need to address is excess.
Yes,
we have not come far enough. For every Mari who made it out of the farm, who became an MP, there is hundreds other farm workers who are who has been left behind, many children that has been with me on the farm, grew up with me on the farm, women, young women that I know who has died through GBV violence, who has died because of cancer and lack of access to treatment. I'm talking about my generation that grew up with me on the same farm. So for every Mari, there is hundreds, thousands others.
Of many,
That is not needed. So how far have we come? Not far enough. We would have, if we need to ask the question, if a girl child falls pregnant today, will she have access to maternal care that will allow her to continue her studies, raise a child, and at the same time have access to further studies without her being removed from a child's life?
Okay.
We need to look at empowerment within that. Meaning,
because I'm looking at it this way, right? That one would say we have done very well. We have had a speaker who is a woman. We have had women in leadership positions. Now we have them as in the corporate world as directors, as CEOs, people like yourselves. Yes, it's not perfect, but one would say that South Africa has not done so bad in terms of empowering our Mbokotos. I'm going to go into this part where you are a founder of A Voice to Parliament, and you speak of communities. And I think that's where they say if you empower your woman, if you empower the woman, you empower the country. What are the few things that stood out to you that you feel that are not heard of often from communities?
Are you talking about in terms of the good things, the positive things that are happening in communities?
Why did you feel the need to have a driven organization voice to parliament? Did you feel that certain community things were not addressed?
Oh yes, I think what has happened is that 94 was the big breakthrough for us, right? We had the dawn of our democracy. Everybody, we were voting. I mean, that was a special day, right? I don't know how old you are, Bafana. I forgot. I don't
Very
know
young.
how you experienced 1994. But
I have no memory of 1994, so I think you know how old am I.
Again, I look at it generationally. I was standing in the line with my mother, who was voting for the first time, and I was voting for the first time. And I was standing with my aunts in the same line. So it was generational, right? But so there was this honeymoon period of 10 years. Pre-94, we had this program on TV, Your Voice, Your Vote, something to that effect. I can't remember the name of it now, but it was given in different languages. And I think many people still today say, my voice is my secret, or my voice, because of
Yeah,
that
your vote is
educational
your
program.
secret.
Yes, because of that educational program. But what has taken shape over the after 94 is that it is as the citizens and parliament is far removed from each other, meaning they make the decisions and we live our lives, right? And the more the lack of governance and service delivery happened, the more disillusioned people became with democracy, to say that it actually didn't bring us anything. So you still say the majority of South Africans today, if you go in the streets in our communities, they will say to you, what did it bring for us? Nothing. For the politicians, yes, it made them gave them better lives. And the reason for that is because what we have failed to do was to empower communities to take ownership for their communities and to participate in the democratic processes so that public representatives will not ignore the voices of the people. The reason the ANC has fallen below 40%, below 50, sorry, that they just reached 40% threshold is because they failed to listen to the people. And I sat in sixth administration, and I can tell you how political parties becomes disengaged from what matters most in the legislative process in terms of the people who live with the laws that are being made in parliament. A voice to parliament is, first of all, to recognize that change is not going to happen from the top down. It needs to happen from the bottom up. In order for the voices of the people to be heard in the halls of power, and for people who sit in the halls of power to not forget who it is that they serve, voice to parliament is that engine to say that we need to get communities to take ownership, not politicians. The worst thing that happens in elections is when people say, what are you going to do for me, to a political party? We have swapped enslavement almost, It's enslavement for those who wants to govern my ward. He gives me a food
Bless
parcel, he
you.
gives me a vote. You understand? We
It's
have
not
literally cheapened democracy.
It's not about the quality or the character of a leader. Now it has become about what am I getting for my vote? If it's like you are selling your vote for something, and this is a whole country. You can't be giving away a country for 350 or for a food parcel.
But but we do that because you see, whatever is in the head will ail the body. Whatever the head is ailed with, the body will be ailed with. In South Africa, politics has taken on the dimension of patronage, right?
Certainly,
That's why I say it's patronage. So what does the voter do? The voter uses the only thing that he has to bar to
To
bargain with.
bargain.
It's his vote. But what I'm championing is enabling communities to take a hold of their own power to radically reshape the way they are governed, how they engage, how public representatives engage with them. My biggest fight, Bafana,
Yes.
My biggest fight is against the hunger vote. That political parties come to power on the basis of the poverty of our people. Because they have the money to buy the vote, they can buy the vote and get into power. I call it the hunger vote.
Around the people. I'm going to come to this, Marie. Because actually, when you speak about the issue of the political space in South Africa right now, and now you have something called the GNU. And people are hopeful that beyond this, we would have something new. Some are saying nothing will change. It's still going to be few guys at the top making decisions while we suffer. Do you think that there would be a time in this country where we would have a woman president? Do you think that time is nearer?
That time will come because I'm going to ensure that I am part of those that advocate for that. There will be a woman president in my generation, I'm telling you.
Yes.
Because what we need is not less women in parliament. We need more women in parliament. It's an indictment on political parties that you have less women in the seventh administration than in the sixth administration. And it does call us as women to organize. And I'm busy organizing. Organize women to become politically active.
Most women right now, there's been a scourge of mental health, gender-based violence, rape, and these are the things that we've been crippling with. I grew up hearing this, women and children, empower women and children, protect women and children. We even had that chat line call, 0800, I forgot the number. And it seems like we are not making inroads in terms of addressing and actually impacting change. Is it lack of leadership, or is it maybe communities are not as participative as we'd ever wanted them to be in terms of addressing the scourge of GBV, mental health, and all of these that affect women and children? And I think mental health goes across board, even men.
I think the reason why I mentioned to you and said that, spoke about support systems for women, is because at the heart of empowering and enabling a woman is when she has the support around her. And the biggest support is family. The reason we have what we have today in South Africa, with the escalating crime levels, the escalation in gender-based violence, is directly linked to the breakdown of the family. And this is why I advocate so hard for Christian Judeo principles in politics, because what we see is that the more you have the state take on the role as parent, the less empowered the family unit becomes. We don't need the state to govern our daily lives. We need the state to ensure that laws are in place that protects the vulnerable, the poor, protects a business, gives freedom for enterprise. That's what we need the state to do, not to become the grandfather of us all or the nanny of us all. But that's what we have. And the only way that you actually protect women and empower women, number one, is to make sure that a woman has a roof over her head, meaning she has a home that she can, a place that she can call home. Do you know how bad homelessness in South Africa is with women having to sell their bodies in order for them to have a roof over their head? They need to stay with men that abuses them economically, emotionally, abuses them because she has no other avenue. So how do you rectify these things? One, we need to emphasize the role of fathers again in the lives of their children, of husbands, in the lives of their homes. You cannot emasculate men and have a healthy society. If you want to empower women, empower and support them by socially supporting them first, meaning a man must do his job in terms of the raising of his children. You can't, a politician cannot speak about empowering women, yet he's got 10 unfathered children in different communities that he himself is not fathering. If I have got a cold, I'm going to give you a cold, Bafana, if you're in my proximity. I will give you my virus, whatever it, if it's influenza, I will give you the flu.
Yes.
You can't, I can't have flu and then I give you chicken pox. What am I saying?
Mm-hmm.
We have leaders that are failing at fatherhood, but they speak about the empowerment of women. The worst
I think also, the discussion also, speaking of a family unit, it's how is the decline lately of marriage, a rise in single parenting, something called baby mamas, as we know them now, and also baby daddy, there are also baby daddies out there. And we realize, we see that marriage is no longer seen as the most important part of ensuring that there's a family unit where children grow up in a healthy environment. But some will argue that what's the use of me raising a child in a marriage where I'm not happy? So your views in the modern 21st century marriage, as a woman who's been in parliament and you're in a happy marriage, what is the future of marriage in South Africa? How do you see it? I mean, now everybody is speaking about the high rate of divorce in this country. It seems like there's a decampaigning of marriage generally.
You know, one of the things, I didn't believe in marriage, eh, Bafana? I didn't believe in marriage.
Okay, this is interesting.
I did not. I grew up on a farm. Women were beat by men. They were like treated like property, like their children, right? So
yes.
I come from where contract, you know, the old, I don't, you know, you're not going to be familiar with this, but this is also the legacy of the apartheid years. The legacy of that is the fatherlessness. Remember, my father was a seasonal worker. He came from the Transkei. He came to the Western Cape. He came to the Western Cape. I'm going to use my story to illustrate a point, right? So he came from the Transkei. My mother was sold to him, right? She was kidnapped as a young child from Grassy Park, sold on the farms to this older man who was in his 30s. She was 11 years old. I didn't know my father. My father fathered three children with my mother. I was the last born. And he then left the farm, right? He left her. He had another woman. We never talk about all these things.
Yes.
There are things that no government can fix, right? No government can fix father responsibility. They cannot fix that.
Yes.
They cannot fix that. What they can do is make sure that when a man must pay maintenance, that he will pay maintenance in terms of the legislation.
They can only regulate, yes.
Yeah, they can regulate. But in terms of, let's talk about this total breakdown in the social support structure. It is because it becomes much easier. I'm going to tell you, as a society, we are hypocritical. We want to address gender-based violence, but at the same time, we don't want to speak about the fact that men leaders many times in our communities are fathering children, are having relationships with students, are sugar daddies to people. What is that? Right? We don't want to speak about that. Is that not a form of gender-based violence? When you are telling a young girl that as a politician, you are supporting her by keeping her in a flat, buying her a weave, all of that, and you are making her your property, in fact. That's not gender-based violence. When we speak about our girl children seeing their bodies as a tool, as an economic tool, we don't say we are contributing to the breakdown of our families, right? There is a place of personal responsibility that we as Africans must start speaking about, where we cannot blame apartheid, we cannot blame poverty, because our parents, they were poor, ne? Our parents were poor.
And they were not slave queens. And they didn't go around being slave queens because they were poor.
We must go back to the principles. We must take ownership generationally, and we must go back to the principles where we not give politicians so much power, where a councillor buries the dead in our community and it gives him a vote.
We can't be.
No.
You look at this thing, Marie, that and I'm glad you touched base on this issue of how lately women have seen their bodies. Some are even going to Dubai for BBLs and stuff, where they see themselves as economic property or some sort of a product that they can trade for
Yes,
whatever reasons, but
commercial.
also for commercial. And there's this other issue as well that I've seen taking a trend of what do you call independent women, women who are educated, who are leaders in industries, who themselves seem not to be doing very well in marriage and in family. Is when you are one of those women, well educated, served in community, went to parliament, but you still have a husband, you still have a thriving marriage, where do you think they get it wrong? Is it because maybe they become muscular themselves, or they bring the office into the house?
I think because we have such weak models of fatherhood in many of our communities, where women have to make it at all odds, you know, and the woman who makes it is the stronger ones, right? It's the ones that they make it because they're clever, they're intelligent, they have some out, right? The value misalignment is because we look at success within the con within the within the framework of money. Success is equated to I've made it because I've got the money. Your whole life
Yes,
can be
yes.
falling apart, but because you're driving a Mercedes-Benz, you are able, you've got a black credit card, you've made it. That is the definition of success, right? And
Yes.
what I love this whole concept that I read in the book that was wrote by Fatima Meer with Nelson Mandela, where he say Mayibuye i-Afrika, yeah? Which is a call back to the values, right? We are our strongest when we have family. We are the strongest when we're able to function within community, right?
Yes.
And what has started to happen, unfortunately, with TikTok, social media, all of that, is there is this candy floss success that is based on how big your behind is, or how you know you need to look like Beyoncé, and you are, that is the definition of womanhood, is looking like Beyoncé. It is because something is happening in society where the values and principles that sustain societies has becomes polluted and corrupted, because what is being held up to our children are Cardi B, right? Cardi
Yes,
B,
yes.
Megan the Stallion, that becomes the definition, right? Of women being empowered, right? In terms of their sexuality and all of that. We must question these things. We must question it, because for the same lyrics that says that use your
Your
body as
body.
a commodity does not tell you the consequences of women having to be on antidepressants because they need to deal with rejection because of the lack of sustained relationships. It doesn't speak on the things that the breakdown of intimate relationships and the impact on that of on the emotional well-being of a woman. For her to go through three, four, five boyfriends, have one-night stands, have friends with benefits, they're not telling you what it does, because Hollywood has shown us that, you know, sex is power, right? You can be powerful by using your body and being the girl who carries the bag and secures the bag, but they're not telling you how those women are suffering in loneliness, depression, how they are needing to be on the couches of psychologists to survive and overcome loneliness. They're not sharing these things, right? I have not made it to Parliament back, right? Let me share this with you as an end to this, to share something with you. It was devastating because I worked extremely hard. And it was also devastating because I felt I deserved to be back in Parliament because of the work that I have done. But that devastation and disappointment has not finished me. Because why? Because
Your
I had a
family.
husband who sat by me, said to me, how do you feel? Do you want to talk about it? You know?
So sat I'm going to come to this. You know,
I don't know if I answered.
You answered my question very well. Because we are worried to say, and as someone who is Christian, that we are losing most women. They see themselves as commodities. Now, the value of a man is his bank account, and the value of a woman is how she looks. But it's no longer more about character. It's no longer more about values. It's no longer more about vision. It's more about what can I get from her and what she can get from me. And we look at, and that becomes toxic in along the way, where women then ends up trying to use men to get what they want, and men end up vice versa. But when you look at it, do we blame poverty? Do we blame the lack of resources? Do we blame parenting? What do we blame for where we for how did we get here? Is it because maybe we are raised by a broken woman from apartheid, and then we are just carrying on the same, carrying on the same trajectory?
I want to ask people to watch the documentary that was made by Kirk Franklin, Father's Day.
Yes.
Bafana, the chickens has come home to roost in a big way for us as Africans. Because the breakdown of fathers having to work on the mines, fathers working far away for most of the year, they only come home in December, right? I'm talking about it generationally, the generational pain of abandonment, of not having active fathers in our lives. We have recycled that pain. You know what I mean? We have literally repeated it. I am telling you what broke the curse in my life is a man who comes from a family. They were not rich. His mother worked in a factory. His father was a pastor who worked in a very poor community. And he was, his father had to, I'm talking about my husband. My husband changed the way I looked at marriage. I told you I didn't believe in marriage because what I saw was women having to sell their bodies to have a roof over their head. What I saw growing up was women being beaten by men, getting blue eyes as, you know, being treated as if they are the child in the house, right? And their bodies belong to men. That's what I saw. I did not believe in marriage. Now, for many, many South Africans, we have had that as a, we have seen that. And the children who made it, if we're honest now, today, the children who made it are the ones whose families were intact. And research shows it. Research shows us that a child who grows up in a healthy family environment is less likely to fall into drug addiction and into crime than a child who comes from a broken home. In 2022, Women's Parliament, there was a study over a 10-year period on GBV. The study showed what was the commonality of those that perpetrates gender-based violence and violence, the worst kind of violence, is the boy child who grows up and comes from a broken home.
True. And I'm going to come in here, Mary, and just as a parent as well, I know you have championed this in Parliament. You stood up against the Bella Bill, which seeks to take the power away from the parent and let the state dictate the upbringing of the child. Your view so far in terms of parenting in South Africa, as a mother yourself, I've seen a lot of kids lately are raised by iPads. Kids are raised by TVs. the technology, social media that we have, and how it impacts the child's life. I grew up in the era of what, towards the end of the 90s and 2000s, so it's a different era. But then looking at the current stage now, with the government trying to somehow impose their power, what would you say is at stake now? What would you say is the state of grooming young boys and girls, raising up children now? Is it difficult than before, or is it... Marie?
We need to look at the average South African. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, I can hear you.
Can you still hear me? Yeah. We need to look at what is the experience of the average South African parent raising a child. We have 40% of, I think it was 40% in the last stats, it's 38% of single-headed households, right? So it means that either a woman or a father is heading up that home, needing to look after, raising those children. And most people have more than two children. So you will leave your house, say, this morning at 6 o'clock, and you will be back at 6 this afternoon. Who's raising that child in your absence with the lack of support that we have within communities now? Who raises that child? For most working class families, the care and of children and the raising up of their children are done with very limited support. And it needs both government and the private sector to address this. When we talk about the whole issue around gender-based violence and the root causes of gender-based violence, the impact of child abandonment, the impact of fathers, it is government love to call it the ANC's favorite word. We need a whole societal response. Well, what is the whole societal response? It means we need more interventions practically. When a child finishes school in the afternoon, there must be a place for that child to go that is safe, that he can have a meal, that he can do his homework, and where he's not left on his own at home. Most families do not have that kind of support. Okay.
Yes.
They don't have the support for a child after school. The mother, the single mother who works from 6 to 6, arrives home at 7 at night. She does not have an off day, right? On Monday to Friday, she's working. On Saturday, she's washing the house, washing the clothes. She's trying to get the house right. On Sunday, you understand, a single woman, a single mother has no off day.
True.
Because there is no intervention support for women. What has happened in our country is that the African principle of Ubuntu, it is a buzzword. We've used it now as a brand culture word that has no meaning, because the laws that needs to protect women, protect children, provide them with safety, ECD centers that can become aftercare centers, it becomes more and more bureaucratic and state controlled rather than community enabled. So what am I saying to you? I'm saying to you that in order for us to respond, we need to be honest and open and frank and bold enough to say it is not working for the South African family today. The economy is not working for them. The laws that are being envisioned by the government of the past, and I don't know now with the GNU, needs to address the very things that will make it more secure for families to raise their children, whether she be a single mother, single father, make it community-based, empower communities, give them, let the money go to the community. Not to the politician and to his pals.
They always say it takes a village to raise a child. So an empowered village will raise an empowered child. I'm gonna
Yes.
wrap up with this last question, my sister, because of time. As a Christian and as someone who has been very vocal about Judeo-Christian values, how then, because lately, if you are honest, that there is a move to render Christianity something historic that belongs into the history of time or
Yeah,
does being of
yeah,
history. However, these
yeah.
values are central to who we are, and these values are central towards building family and stronger communities. How then do we utilize Judeo-Christian values or the Bible, to be more direct, to change mindsets and somehow bring back that moral regeneration, bring back Ubuntu?
It starts with who do we put on our SGBs to govern our school governing bodies? Who do we elect as counselors, to govern in our municipalities and to govern on our behalf? Who are the leaders that we are choosing? It is as basic as who do I marry? Who do I go out with? Do I go out with a guy who is more interested in sleeping with me than he is in my well-being? It is as basic as the values and principles that governs your life as an individual, to how do I govern and raise my children, my family, how do I manage my own life, to the place of who do I choose to be in government in at the local, provincial, or a local level. If you are serious about tomorrow, you better be serious about what is the guidelines that governs your life, right? If you're serious about the future, then you must become serious about what are the pillars that holds up my life, right? We cannot say, I cannot say I want a healthy life, and I speak to myself here because that is my challenge. I cannot say I want a healthy body, but I put anything into my mouth. And I do not do what is healthy for my body. It's the same with society. Christian Judeo principles is what gave us the best leaders, right? When you look back on in our history, it is those Christian Judeo principles. Albert Luthuli was driven by justice principles because of his Christian background.
Yes,
Charlotte
Robert
Mackay,
Sobukwe.
Robert. Charlotte Maxeke was driven to come to the Karoo to do the interventions they did, fight for justice on the basis of white. It's the Christian principles that drove them, convicted them to that part. When people tell us that Christianity, as a faith, is in the decline, it is because they wish for us to believe it is in the decline. They want us to believe that it is of no effect. But history speaks of a faith that has brought education, that has brought innovation, that has brought freedom to societies,
Justice.
justice to societies. When you look at the principles of Christian, what are the principles of Christian Judeo principles when we talk about it? It is the principle of family, the principle of justice. Do right by people. Do right by others, right? Don't do unto others what you don't want done to yourself. It is the most basic principle of justice, is to do right. So
Murray, me and you, we can go the whole day, but I have to leave you, to leave it here for today. Thank you for coming through. Just in closing, we can want to give you a minute or two to speak to women as we celebrate Women's Month. Just the words of encouragement or inspiration. Your 2 minutes start now. Go.
every single human being has come through the birth canal of a woman. We are the entry point for our children. And we are possess within us the ability to nurture, to bring from nothing. My mother did that. She raised me with very little. She made sure that I had something to eat. And I want to speak to you, women. We are much further than where our previous generations has been. But the future is in our hands, and we must save South Africa and Africa for the next generation. It will only happen when we are true to who we are and where we come from, and remember that we are not our worst day. Our best day is yet to come because we are breathing. We are women.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you so much. That's Marie Sukers, founder of Voice to Parliament and also a former MP, former ACDP MP in our National Assembly. What a wonderful woman. What a powerful woman. Indeed, stay on the lookout for this voice. South Africa does not know, or South Africa is yet to see the power and the strength that this lady has. Other than that, let's call it a wrap. M. Bafana Mutise, this was our Women's Month series, Women in Leadership, proudly brought to you by Podcast Party. See you next time, same place, same time. Ciao, ciao.